Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Buju Anim
Danach Ah at Anzenu Shoop with An
Tante
Ay Inuhadikay.
This is Words and Culture, a series on Indigenous languages, funded by SiriusXM through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.
Hey friend, welcome to Words and Culture. This is the Anishinaabe episodes, and I'm your host, Melissa Spence. Like I mentioned in our previous episodes, I worked as a radio DJ for years, and I got to know a lot of Indigenous artists through their art, through their interviews, and through their live performances. One artist in particular whom I recall being so gentle and loving during my very early days as a nervous interviewer was Cheyenne Havorka. You may recall one of her tunes called Can't Change the World from the hit show Blackstone that aired back in 2011. How's that for a throwback? Cheyenne Havorka is an award-winning songwriter, multi-instrumentalist, humanitarian, and performer. And when I say music was her passion, I meant it. She holds an honors bachelor of music in education and a master's in education. And despite it being well over a decade since we last spoke, it was like only a couple years had gone by. So what has she been up to? Well, I asked, but first, and like we always do in the Indigenous community, often we are asked to introduce ourselves. This way people know who we are and where we come from. I asked Cheyenne to do just that.
For allowing me to speak today.
So Cheyenne, obviously you're a musician and you're someone whom, if anyone's been paying attention to Indigenous music for the past 20 years, have heard your name. Tell us a little bit about how you became who you are in the early days. Let's start there.
So I don't know actually how many people know how I ended up on the music path. Like, I've always been one of these people who kind of follow where I believe I'm being led to be, spiritually, by creator, whatever it is that makes sense to you. And I remember I was an educator in a grade 7-8 class, and I'm in this class and this letter came across my desk, and it was about elders coming into the community to give spirit names. And so this young group of youth that I was working with really wanted to go, and it was a Friday night. That's back in my like mid-20s, so I had a very different approach to life at that time, especially on a Friday. But I really cared about my students and I really wanted to do well by them. And at that point in my learning journey, like, I did feel like very tied to the land and tied to my culture, and was starting to like re-engage with that with the elders in the community up north. So I went to the naming ceremony, and they did it through a sweat lodge. There was a lot happening in that lodge, and nothing was happening to me, but that was okay because I was there for the kiddos, not for me. And then the second round, because there was kids there, or youth, I should say, like 12, 13, 14-year-olds, they gave us a break. And the second time I came in, that's when things started to happen for me. And one of the things that I have been told I can share is, like, I first saw this big lightning bolt come down, and it grabbed all the rocks, the grandmothers and grandfather rocks, and pulled them off the ground. And then they dropped. And again, it happened. And this time this great big bird came through, black bird came through and flew out. And again, nobody said anything. So anyway, the next day we're at the powwow, and the elder came up and he was speaking in Anishinaabe Mo'en. And, you know, I'm on my learning journey with the language, right? but I knew he was talking about me. And then, you know, so my name had come through, and then he said, you know, it came out as Makabe Benesi, and it was Black Thunderbird. And I was just like so honored, because I wasn't there for my name. I was there for the kids. And this is important, because this is where my journey actually started musically. I had loved music. I'd, you know, taken piano lessons and singing lessons and joined the high school band and took on extra jobs so that I could drive myself to more lessons. Like, I love music. So I got home, and I'm in my 20s, and I pulled out my favorite piano book just to practice in the afternoon before going for the evening ceremonies. And this piece of paper fell out from when I was 13. And it was this poem I had written about thunderstorms. And I'd completely forgotten about this poem. And it was all about how I loved to be in the thunderstorm, where it could, you know, the storm could hide my heartbreaking, and the rain could hide my tears, and the wind could hold me, and the lightning would like light the way for me. So I turned that into a song that afternoon, and that became like the debut song on the Thunderbird album, which is the album that started my journey. Years later, I decided, well, I didn't decide. I felt like Creator was pushing me back into education again, because like people started offering me jobs in a time where teaching jobs are very difficult to get. And so I took that as my calling to go back. And then I had my child, he's 8 now, and got into a lot of land-based learning at the same time. I knew I couldn't, you know, be a new mom, an educator, self-sustaining, and a touring musician. So I took a step back from the stage, but I still wrote music. And I feel like in the last 2 years, like I'm writing more, being pulled more. Yes, I'm just kind of being pulled back into it again. And so I'm not sure what Creator's got planned, but here I am.
That's such a beautiful story about how you got your name and how you're following your path like in a heart-centered way, which is truly how we are supposed to be living, right? Like that's supposed to guide us. And I was curious as to where you were these past few years as well. You kind of just, I don't know, I guess I thought you just took a break or whatever, but thanks for clearing that up. You know, that's a really great thing to commit yourself to for these past few years. That's a beautiful story about your name. Did anybody else in the ceremony see what you saw? Like, do you know to this day if anybody saw that?
No, nobody saw what I saw, and I didn't see what anybody else saw, but funny enough, there was one gentleman in there, and he has given me permission because now we became connected through that sweat lodge. During the first half would all of a sudden start crying and saying asema, like to the firekeeper outside. And I was just like, wow, like he's experiencing something very, very real. And then the second time he was crying so much, he had to leave, and I never knew why. And then like the next day, he felt compelled to give me an eagle feather. That was my very first eagle feather. So the elders help us do like the exchange. And I still carry that feather. It was approximately 6 years after that sweat lodge where we just randomly connected on Facebook again. And I had just, because I'm a 60 scoop survivor, right? So I was pulled off community when I was 6, almost 7. So I remember who my home community was, but I wasn't allowed to reconnect until we were older, right? So, and then really, I just didn't realize all I had to do was call the band office and everybody remembered me and I knew them. And it was just like, boom, I reconnected to one of my uncles. And I said, like, I'm kind of hoping to find out what my clan is, because now I have, you know, my name, but I'd had the name already for 6 years. And my uncle lived out in the bush lots and only came out every now and then. And he's just like, oh yeah, well, we're Turtle Clan. And he was the only uncle that knew that, because everybody else was kind of disconnected. And so I found out it was Turtle Clan. And then I connected with this other fella that was there in the sweat lodge. And he's like, she was looking for you. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, Grandmother Turtle kept coming out of the rocks and was asking me to find somebody. I didn't know who she was looking for, but I guess like Grandmother Turtle was physically like touching him and it was too much for him. So,
wow, that's incredible. I'm also Turtle Clan.
Are you?
Yeah. Shout out to the Turtle Clans. I know I've met some people in Arizona who are Turtle Clan, and it was really comforting to meet others as well. Like, they were all over the place, right? Like, it's everywhere. Mm-hmm. So I'm a a daughter of a 60 scoop. So I know that my mother was removed from her community when she was probably around the same age as you, and she lost her language in this foster home, right? She went in speaking fluent Ojibwe and came out only being able to understand it. So I wanted to ask, what was your relationship like to the language before that? Do you have any recollection of that or culture in general?
Yes. We weren't fluent, but it's like a mishmash of that. And I think there's a couple French words in there too, because like I never ever heard it before, but like most of it was like 50-50 English, Anishinaabemowin. And then when we went to the first foster home, I was very confused because it was all, I only knew part of the language. And then when we were adopted, so I would have been 7, almost 8 at that point. And we grew up in Steinbeck, and like the school had half days in German and half days in English. And I really didn't know what's going on. So I lost a lot of the Anishinaabemowin. And then when we moved up to Red Lake, there's like lots of Anishinaabe people up there, right? And Oji-Cree people. And I was waitressing at the Lakeview restaurant there. And, you know, I'd hear the language at the tables being spoken. And all of a sudden I started to remember something like, hey, did you just say to go over in the canoe? And the guy looked at me and he's like, how'd you know that? And I'm like, I don't know. It's just like, I remember that from something. And so I'd ask if I could just sit and listen, you know, just to try it, because it sounded so familiar. It felt familiar. And I started to recall some of the words. And now I'm just on my learning journey to try to gain more, learn more. But it's there's a big responsibility with the language, because it's not like just knowing a word for a word for a word. There's like so much meaning and impact and like ancient knowledge really in each and every part of that word that tells you more than just, you know, that's a Labrador bush, like tells you its location, what they're used for, where you can find them. Oh, I said that already. What part of the plant you're using, it's built right into the name. So that's where I'm at now, is like I'll recognize the word, but I don't always know all the meanings, like those. And so that's what I'm learning now. And especially when I'm out on the land, like I really want to understand every part so that knowledge of that plant is coming with the word, you know?
Yes. A lot of the conversations I've been having is revealing to me, someone who doesn't speak the language and is trying to learn. It's more than just learning, you know, the basics of the word. There's so much description. There's almost even a spirit or an essence behind the word, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And so certainly I'm not fluent, but on my, like as a second language learner or a language learner, I'm not sure how you, an ELL learner, however you would classify me with the early language stuff. And, you know, like now with my son, like it's a big part of our day. Like every morning we get up and we go for a walk through the bush, and it's about a half mile. And then we're lucky enough to have this natural stream that grows on the yard. And so I have a cup set up there, a little cup that doesn't rust, stainless steel. And we take a dip out of that spring every morning, and we say our prayers in Anishinaabe, and he does too. But then we try to learn something along the way too. Like, what are we going to learn about? And then, you know, we'll talk to some language speakers and use other resources, usually people like our living libraries that are willing to share and learn more. And then we talk about that the next time we're out and take some time to engage with the plant and engage with that outdoor part of what we're learning about, depending on like what season it is. We'll also have an impact on what it is we're going to learn about. And we try to speak in Anishinaabemowin primarily, and our prayers are always in Anishinaabemowin Itta, right?
That's so beautiful. I'm really curious to hear how it's coming back, right? Like it sounds like it's like this essence that's coming back to you slowly, and I've heard other people say you need to live the language in order for you to really get it and to really become fluent. It's not just reading books and doing workshops. You really have to live in it, like you said, going and praying in it and visiting the land and really, really taking stock of everything around you and translating it.
Yeah. And like, I do believe that for me anyway, like everybody has their own way of connecting with the world around them. But I find that when I'm out on the land, especially after like my prayer and that, I don't know what it is about that morning prayer, that greeting of the sun and drinking of the water. And then when we're walking back, like the words almost come easier. And, allowing yourself, and I'm going to say it this way, allowing yourself to speak in the language with the world around you makes a very big difference, right? And just being okay with leaving the English behind. Because it does, it starts to like clean up in there. It's almost like cobwebs being, and all of a sudden a word will just pop out and you're like, oh yeah, that's how, I think that's how we said that. Like, well, I'm 48 now. Well, I will be 48 in a month, but that's, my memory serves correctly, 45 years ago. I'm sure this is how my uncle had said it or my gookum had said it.
I was talking about music yesterday and how a lot of the language, and not just Anishinaabe, Moen, but different languages are being translated into children's songs to make it easier for people to absorb. And I wanted to go into music with you and what you've been working on lately. So how has the language affected your music now?
How it started was a musician friend of mine, Micah, who is not Indigenous, but has spent a lot of time considering what his role is in Canada, or what he calls Canada, and he always does the quotation marks, which I appreciate, as a settler, and in his capacity of being a musician, what does reconciliation look like for him? So he asked me if I would be willing to write this piece with him called Grandmother Song, which this Anishinaabe song that I wrote is kind of like encompassing this entire other piece. He grew up on the land. So like he has like similar connections, but from a very, very different viewpoint. And his family grew up with other Anishinaabe families. And he was kind of like, their family was like the non-Indigenous family in this community. And they never claimed or tried to claim any form of indigeneity at all. They just grew up in that kind of setting. So he gets it. So he wanted to write this piece, and it's a story. So there's barely any singing throughout the piece. And it starts off with this young girl talking about how her grandmother shares the songs with her. And there's one song that she just starts to sing, but she never finishes it. And, you know, it reminds me of Leanne Goose, you know, Leanne.
Yeah.
Because she was part of my music thesis, actually, like years ago. And she had said to me, she's just like, well, the songs aren't ours. They come to us through the spirits, right? Like, and that always stuck with me, eh? Like, I love Leanne. But anyway, and so the essence of the song that the grandmother says, she's like, no, it's going to come to you eventually, but I don't know when. And so that little chant comes in and out of the whole storyline. And it talks about this young girl who's like walking these two worlds, right? So she's walking this traditional life of learning from her gookum and her mom slowly, like the seven teachings. I think it takes place over 6 or 7 years when you add up all the years throughout the storyline. And very land-based learning. But then her other being needs to go to school in the colonial setting and live through those experiences of being in a colonial setting. So you can just follow her just zigzagging really through these two worlds. And when she's out on the land, like when the opportunities come out, the grandmother will give her another teaching based on one of the seven teachings. And in the end, just before she gets the final teaching, which is love in this storyline, the grandmother passes away. And she didn't get the final teaching. So there's this great big epic thing that happens. And then after that, the spirit of grandmother kind of pops into her head and the rest of the song comes out. And so that's where the seven teaching songs come out. And so I actually wrote that, or that I should say, that song came to me when Micah placed this idea to me. That song came to me and I said, well, this is what just came to me tonight. And so that main melody comes in and out. It's woven through like a musical motif throughout this. It's about a 48 minute piece, spoken word, not spoken word, like storytelling, I should say, with an orchestra background, ending with just hand drums and voice with this piece.
Well, let's take a listen to the full song. This is Grandmother's Song, or Gookum Song, by Cheyenne Havorka.
Button days away.
Mother Song or Kukum Song by the beautiful Cheyenne Hvorka. When I tell you I felt that on a cellular level, I mean that combination of Anishinaabe Moen with the drum reached a part of me that a lot of music these days does not. There really is that essence of spirit when we speak or sing in the language. And I have no doubt that our ancestors are always there, nudging us down the path, no matter how subtle or obvious it might be. Our dreams, for example, have been the meeting place for so many of my own encounters with ancestors. So when I hear a story like Cheyenne told about spirit gifting us messages and teachings as we journey through life, I know exactly what she's talking about. We're also clan sisters, so maybe that has something to do with it as well. At the very end of every episode, we like to present three words to our listeners that they can learn on the spot.
Well, I think Minobamadizwin would be a good one. Just that walking of that good life, right?
Can you repeat it and then I'll repeat it after you?
Mino.
Mino.
Bamadizwin.
Bamadizwin.
Yeah, Minobamadizwin.
Minobamadizwin.
Yes, so I really like that one. Zaga Edewin for love. I don't know how they would say it in Manitoba, but out in this area, it's Zaga Edewin.
Zaga Edewin.
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 Yeah, Zaga Edewin.
Zaga Edewin.
Yeah, Zaga Edewin. So love. Dibadendizwin.
Truth.
Close.
Honesty.
You're getting there. Want to try again?
Yeah.
And it's one that we talked about.
Okay.
That should give you a
humility.
A humility. There you go. Diba.
Diba.
Den.
Den.
Dizwin.
Dizwin.
Yeah. Diba den dizwin.
Diba den dizwin.
Yeah. Humility.
Beautiful.
Yeah. So I like, those are the ones that stick out for me anyway.
Awesome. Where can people get the song?
Well, it'll be live on Spotify.
Perfect.
For sure. And I got to get it up on SoundCloud.
Miigwech, thank you.
You're welcome. Bamapi.
From her debut album back in 2007, this is Cheyenne Hvorka with Black Thunderbird.
And I cry. wings are broken, but my heart is strong. I'll fly again and sing the sky my songs. The storm will hide me in its symphony. The sounds and lights will always comfort me. And I wonder, and I cry, how can I hear, how can I fly? When I wonder and I cry,
Jimmy Gwetch for hanging out with us today on Words and Culture. These are the Anishinaabe episodes, and this is our fourth.